shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to the latest edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. Today we have got a woman who's going to speak to us and expand on her views, like all my guests have, and she may well wind you up, or you might say she's talking plain common sense. We need more of this in 21st century Britain. Her name is Caroline Farrow. She writes for the UK Catholic Universe, amongst many other internet platforms and Catholic newspapers and magazines. She's always good value for money. And I thought it'd be good to talk to her, especially in the light of the Pope just visiting Ireland and, of course, this terrible sex abuse scandal that he seems to be engulfed in at the moment. So here's my guest. Her name, Caroline Farrow, and she joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Hi, Caroline.
Hello, John.
It's great to have you here today. Let's start then, shall we, with this visit by the Pope. Some people even booed him. The turnout wasn't as great as it was a few years ago when the previous Pope went. And when we look at the statistics, I think the attendance at Mass is gone from something like 80% of the population to 33%. Does the Pope have any credibility and any authority anymore in Ireland and indeed in the UK?
Okay, well, if we move to Ireland, which is where he visited, of course, Catholicism, the influence of Catholicism has been waning there. But interestingly, in the last census in Ireland, 77% of people identified as Catholics. So that's still a huge swathe of the population. And in this day and age, people no longer just tick Catholic or tick Christian, you know, just to tick a box because they feel that they are. It's actually a conscious decision. You know, there's no stigma anymore about saying I'm an atheist or I'm an agnostic. So I think we have to take seriously that, you know, 77% of the Irish population identified as Catholic. And when it comes to the mass turnout, again, you're kind of not really comparing like with like, because the last Pope who visited was St. John Paul II. And, you know, he had this amazing rock star charisma. I think it was the first time a Pope who visited Ireland, and really it was in 1979, and it gave a slightly misleading impression, because even by then Catholicism was waning in Ireland, you know, as sort of secularism was coming in, you know, and the church was beginning to take more of a back seat. So when you look at the difference in numbers, it's not that surprising. And also, you know, something quite mean-spirited happened, and I think it was awful that people were booing the Pope, because, you know, like him or loathe him, whatever you think of Catholicism, he is a major religious figure, and I can't see that happening to, say, the Dalai Lama or, you know, any other cleric from any other religion. You know, it would have been, the narrative would have been diversity, and so it was quite, I think, bad faith. And a lot of Irish were saying, you know, they have a reputation for being very welcoming, and they felt that it didn't show their country in a very good light, in the same way as, you know, some people felt that when Donald Trump's balloon was floated outside the Houses of Parliament, again, you know, it doesn't show that country as being very hospitable, respectful or welcoming.
But hold on there, Caroline. Some people would say, hold on, don't rewrite history. They've just talked about abortion. They've got a gay prime minister. They've got gay marriage now accepted. These people perhaps who were booing, it may be impolite, but it might reflect where Ireland is. And then when you put into the mix these dreadful sex abuse scandals and now allegations of murder as well of young children, then maybe as the figurehead of this institution, he needs to be told about it and he needs to sort of address it. And is there not a feeling that's not happening? I don't know. Tell me.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few things to unpack there. So in Ireland, the abortion referendum was the result of, say, 20, 25 years of heavy political campaigning. The media in Ireland were very much on the side of reform of abortion. And, you know, and I think the people of Ireland have been kind of subjects to a lot of heavy politicking and a lot of really positive media coverage. And the same with gay marriage as well. And I think most people who voted for that didn't do so as a "I hate the Catholic Church" vote. They were, you know, they had been persuaded, rightly or wrongly, that there was a very strong moral case for it. And of course, you know, I mean, I was involved in some of the campaigning in England. You know, we had this, I went to a debate in the South Bank Centre. It was a feminist debate. And it was so interesting. It was a panel of four women, and three of them were pro-abortion, and I was the only one who was against. So you can already see it was unstacked. You know, it was stacked against the pro-life vote. And then the chair of this panel talked about, one of the questions from the audience was, how can we persuade people to vote in favour of decriminalising abortion? And the chair of the panel, who was supposed to be impartial, started talking about, well, remind people of the mother and baby homes and of all the abuses. So I think there was a lot of kind of anti-Catholicism being whipped up and harnessed. But when you look at, you know, those people who did turn out to see the Pope were really happy to see him. And it was a real contrast, you know, from Catholics on the ground in Ireland, they were really happy, really positive, really hopeful. So it's a mixed thing.
Let's just go back, if we can, then, so that people understand where you're coming from. Your views on abortion are, very succinctly, if you could tell me.
I'm completely against abortion. I don't judge women who've had them. I unfortunately have been through that experience myself, and that's what turned me against it. I think abortion is taking the life of a human child, and it is a very sad and regrettable thing.
So abortion under any circumstances you would say no to?
Yes, I would, because I think you're dealing with the life of a human being here. And I know that's not to discount that women face dreadful circumstances sometimes, you know, that they've been raped, or, you know, their baby may die shortly after birth, or they may feel that they can't cope. But actually, say in the case of rape, you're punishing the child for, you know, the sins of the father. And there are lots of people who have been born as a result of rape and are actually very glad that they were allowed to live.
Sure.
And I think a lot of what I see is, when women are pregnant through rape, they get a lot of other people, particularly well-meaning friends and family, project their feelings onto them.
Okay, I've got to ask this question. So why did you have an abortion?
Oh, well, I was very young. I'd been the victim of a sexual assault. I was working as an air hostess. I was on a temporary contract. I would have lost my job if I had been pregnant, because I was on a temporary contract. It wouldn't have been renewed had I had a baby. I didn't know who the father was. And I was just in a terrible situation, thinking, you know, I don't know how I'm going to cope. And actually, I realised afterwards that had I been challenged, and had I known of the resources and the help that had been available, then I wouldn't have gone through with it. But at the time, everyone was being very well-meaning and saying, you can't have this baby. But actually, as a result of having an abortion, I went through an incredible amount of emotional trauma and pain. And, you know, and it's something that I deeply regret.
Okay, I understand that. So you're anti-abortion. Do you believe in the UK and in Ireland we've almost got abortion on demand? And is it very different to how Steele imagined it back in 67 with the Abortion Act?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, my experience of abortion, and this was in 1997, so it was before really everyone had access to the internet, and everyone talks about, oh, you can look up this information about, you know, the development of your unborn baby, and you can look up all these facts. My experience of an unplanned and unwanted pregnancy was panic, and it was going into denial. It was, oh, help, what do I do? I just don't want to have a baby. I didn't think of myself as pregnant. And I think this is where a lot of women are, you know, they're just trying not to think about it. They just want the situation to end. And nobody, I went into the abortion clinic, and basically I didn't really even have to give my reasons. It was like, well, you want an abortion, you can have one. And nobody talked me through the negative side.
Okay.
And literally, and I think it's, you know, particularly now in the UK where they're saying that you can take abortion pills at home. And in 1966, you know, when the Abortion Act was being debated in Parliament, Baroness Knight argued, she said, this is going to lead to abortion on demand. Mm. And she was heckled at and shouted down. And everyone said, you know, you're scaremongering, you're using a, you know, slippery slope argument. But this is exactly what's happened. And even people who were caught in breach of the law, so there have been clinics who were filmed by a Daily Telegraph investigation who were agreeing to abort babies at 20, 21 weeks, you know, very late term, on the basis that they're a girl or boy, you know, the wrong sex. that's technically illegal, but they weren't prosecuted. And then when somebody tried to bring a private prosecution against them, a young girl, the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, took over this private prosecution and dropped it and landed her with £50,000 worth of costs. So whenever you try and challenge this, you end up basically financially punished. And there seems to be no sanctions for anybody in the UK who, you know, act outside the scope of the Abortion Act, which is really, really, rigid. It says it gives you five circumstances.
Okay, I understand all that, but you mentioned in passing at the beginning when we were talking about the Pope. We don't want to go back to a stage, do we, where girls are having backstreet abortions or babies are being taken off them, sent to Australia. As I say, let's allude to those scandals of the nuns, the sisters and those children and children going missing. We don't want to go back to those dark days. Is there not a place for abortion? Is there not a place for this to be debated properly?
Well, I think society has moved on a lot from, you know, those dark days. And we know, we now know unequivocally that a baby, and unless a mother is seriously negligent, you know, she's a drug addict or some, you know, unless there's something seriously, seriously wrong there, the best place for a newborn baby is with their biological mother. She is the best placed person to care for that child. And a lot of the stigma has gone about, you know, unwed mothers and single mothers and you know, rightly so in many ways. And I think what we have to remember is what was happening generations ago in Ireland, it wasn't simply the Catholic Church. Actually, Irish society were acting in tandem with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church were kind of mopping up the people that society didn't want to look after because, you know, being an unmarried mother, there was a lot of stigma. You know, it was an extra mouth to feed and there'd be no husbands to help provide. So actually the Catholic Church was trying to do very, very misguidedly in many cases what they thought was right. And it was with, you know, I think a lot of people have to ask themselves, you know, it wasn't as if the Catholic Church was imposing themselves on Ireland. Actually, it was with, you know, the consent of the Irish people too, you know. And
the Irish state and the Roman Catholic Church are so entwined, or were so entwined. Did the Pope not really have to make some kind of expression of regret, some apology over that, but also over these abuse scandals which are dogging him at the moment? Even if we just stay in Ireland for the moment, we'll move wider to America later. People want the Pope to speak out. Where do you stand on that? And because I take on board everything you say about some people welcomed him, and, you know, I know how biased the press can be about anybody who's got a view like you've got. However, we can't take away the fact there has been kind of sexual abuse on an industrial scale, and that it was horrendous for single mums, and the church was involved in it, deeply, deeply involved in it. The Pope is the head man, the head honcho. Surely when he was in Ireland, he should have said something.
And I think he did, though, John. So at the beginning of the Mass, normally we have something that we call a penitential rite, which is where everybody in the congregation says sorry. And instead of everybody in the congregation saying sorry, what happened was that the Pope said, I am sorry. I am sorry for the sins of the church. And he listed them. So he listed the mother and baby homes, and he listed the abuse. And he actually went through quite a comprehensive list of everything that, that the church was sorry for. And that was pretty seismic, and that's not been done before. And in, the other thing he did, which is not a news thing, is he met with some of the survivors.
Yes, he did.
And one of the things that I found quite extraordinary was in that meeting, they reported that he didn't know about the industrial schools and the mother and baby homes, and that, you know, mothers were told later on that it was a mortal sin if they were to try and find their babies. And I find that, John, extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. I find it extraordinary that nobody had briefed the Pope that, you know, he didn't seem to know about. I mean, everybody in the world knows about what happened in Ireland. And yet the Pope didn't seem to. And when he did find out, he was very, very shocked.
Hold on. Let me just stop you there. What do you mean he didn't seem to? Do you mean he was play acting or he didn't know? And how the hell wouldn't he know?
Well, you've got to ask yourself this. I mean, the Pope famously says that he doesn't read newspapers or look at the internet. he's from a South American background, you know, and this has been one of, I'm sure we'll get onto this later, but one of the difficulties with this papacy is that he's from South America, which is a very different cultural milieu and background. And so he said that he had no idea. He didn't know what an industrial school was. He didn't know what a mother and baby home was. And obviously now he does know and he was enlightened. But you've got to
ask. Has he now condemned it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Stay there for a moment. Let's just take a short break and then we'll come back. I'm speaking to Caroline Farrow today. We're talking about the Pope's visit to Ireland. We're going to talk about abortion in more detail. We're going to talk about gay marriage. We're going to talk about her views also on the whole trans debate as well. The whole idea of this show, it's not for me to sit here and do a Cathy Newman and try and destroy the guest. It's for the guest to expand. And then we think about it later and we make up our own minds. It's called Shooting from the Lip. It's on Sputnik International. We'll take a short break. We'll be back after this.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting from the Lip.
Hi, welcome back to the John Gaunt Show, Shooting from the Lip, with my special guest today, Caroline Farrow. Caroline, we were just there talking about abortion. You've expanded on your views on that, talking about the Pope. And let's just have a look at the Pope in detail himself as an individual then. You say some of the problem is the fact that he's from a South American background, but this latest scandal that's happening in North America as well, and indeed in the heart of the Vatican. You know, I was reading overnight about coke-fueled rent boy orgies happening actually in the Vatican City. And the Pope is implicated, not by being at the party, but by giving the flat, the apartment, to one of these people. What's going on? Does he know? Is he turning a blind eye? Is he turning a blind eye to what happened in the seminaries? I think it was in Pennsylvania, wasn't it, where this particular bishop was getting into bed with young priests?
Well, it's an interesting question, John.
Is it true? That's the allegation, isn't it?
The allegation is that the Pope knew. I think in charity, we have to think the best of him at the moment. We haven't got any definitive proof. But what seems to have happened, and you know, the Pope's record is unfortunately less than spotless. So when I said that he was from South America, that's not a racist thing. Let's be very clear. Mm. One of the cardinals defending him, Cardinal Supic, said, oh, people hate him because he's a Latino. Well, that's not true, because the Pope is himself Italian. His father was an Italian immigrant to Argentina, and his mother is half Italian. So people don't dislike him because he's a Latino. The problem is he's being brought up in a different culture. Now, Pope Francis is seen as a great reformer and a great liberaliser. And there is a lot of conjecture that he seems to be liberalising the doctrine of the Catholic Church, which has obviously garnered a lot of opposition. So people are seeing that perhaps he's wanting to relax doctrine on, you know, the divorced, whether they can receive communion. There certainly seems to have been some movement on, you know, the death penalty. He didn't change doctrine. He's not able to do that. But he changed, you know, the catechism, which states what Catholic teaching is, and says, oh, you know, we as Catholics don't believe in the death penalty. And that's slightly dubious because, you know, the Catholic Church has always taught that the death penalty is permissible. However, in modern times, we've argued that with modern penal systems being as they are, you know, states shouldn't actually be needing to use it. But that's a different thing, saying you shouldn't need to use it, as to saying it's completely wrong.
And what about his views around homosexuality in the priesthood? He's softening that, isn't he?
Well, no, I mean, he's said he is a son of the church, but, you know, it's a typical, well, and this is right, actually. It's love the sinner, hate the sin.
Yeah.
But because he seems to have this quite liberal, or he's perceived as having a very liberalizing agenda, John, therefore, he's tried to get lots of people within the Vatican on side. And, you know, his zeal, for want of a better word, to reform and to want to change things has meant, I think, that he's been prepared to overlook things. So, you know, this chap with the rent boys who was given an apartment, you know, I think he was thinking, well, OK, he's not actually broken the law. It's nothing to do with children. Oh, he's repented. I know he's a bit dodgy, but actually this really helps me. And this seems to have been, you know, the signature. So there was another chap, Monsignor Battista Rica, who was appointed to clean up the Vatican Bank. And, you know, he had some scandal about being caught in a rent with lift boy, sorry, caught in a lift with rent boys. And, you know, the Pope appointed him to clean up the Vatican Bank. And then when his background came out, then he sort of distanced himself. And then again, we've had the sex abuse scandals in Chile. Pope Francis very famously lashed out against some of the victims groups, and he appointed this bishop that everyone said don't appoint him, Bishop Barros, you know, this guy is dodgy, and he ignored it. And it took 3 years of sort of concerted people digging in their heels and saying, no, this is wrong, for him to finally launch an investigation. And then there's been another cardinal, Daniels, who was caught on tape trying to persuade a victim who had been abused by his uncle, who was a bishop, not to go public and not to report it. And so this cardinal, who, you know, was very complicit in covering up sex abuse, Pope Francis appointed to the Synod on the Family. So he's seen on being a little bit soft on sex abuse or on offenders, because actually when these people have maybe been able to help him advance what he wants to do, then he's just kind of turned a blind eye. And this is what's causing, you know, so much scandal and bad feeling.
Okay, now I was brought up a church in the Church of England. I don't hold any faith anymore. I think it's all nonsense, but that's my view, but I respect yours. But how do you hold your faith when you see the head of your church, God's representative on earth, for goodness sake, being like this towards sex abuse? I know you've mentioned the fact they're not actually children, but that one in America, these are young priests, these are vulnerable. This is the same as the Me Too generation. This is the same as Harvey Weinstein and these foul people, what they're accused of. So how do you keep your faith? I'm not attacking you. I'm asking you genuinely, and you're a family woman. You've got, you know, many children. And how do you cope with this? Because this puts me off the Roman Catholic Church completely.
No, I'm not surprised. And I agree with you. You know, the issue, of, by the way, of Cardinal McCarrick, who was seen to be, you know, sexually abusing and preying on seminarians, that is abusive. It may not be illegal, but it certainly was abusive. I think for me, I keep my faith because, you know, I still believe in the key tenets of the Catholic Church. I believe in God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. I believe that the Catholic Church has been passed down to us from St. Peter. I believe in the faith and the morals and the doctrine of the Catholic Church, but the church is a institution that was left to us by Jesus Christ, but it is made up of, you know, fallible people and human people.
So is he a bad pope?
I don't think he's a bad person. I don't think that he's a controversial pope, I think. I think he's a pope who has, unfortunately, sowed an awful lot of confusion and an awful lot of ambiguity.
Okay, let's move on to the wider picture now then. So, you know, you're a Catholic writer, you talk out on abortion, we'll talk about the trans issue at the moment. Do you think these kind of scandals, though, against your faith now put you into the extremists, bit of a crank in the corner? We'll bring you on to Sunday Morning Live and programmes like that, a poker with a stick, but then we'll all look down our noses at her because those kind of attitudes are dying out. They don't fit in. I mean, I'm sometimes in this position as well, that they no longer fit into 21st century diverse, multicultural Britain. Do you understand the picture I'm painting?
Yes and no. I mean, it's interesting because I think people often bring me on a show because they want to have quite a rabid point of view. And then they're always, I think one of the reasons that I have an awful lot of trolls is because hopefully when you talk to me, I'm quite reasonable, actually. I'm not a desperately judgmental person. And so people, when they hear me speak, are quite surprised by what I do say. And I think the view that I hold on abortion, on gay marriage, on transgenderism, I don't think that it matters that, you know, that is influenced or coloured by my faith. I mean, okay, I think people can use the scandals in the Catholic Church to try and undermine it further, but you can hold those positions without having any Catholic or Christian faith whatsoever.
Where do you stand on trans? Tell us so we all know.
Well, I really don't hate or despise anybody or transgender people, you know, and I think if somebody wants to live their lives as the opposite sex, if they feel that they really need to do that, then I certainly don't want to punish them or hate them or, you know, I think they should be free. We should all be free to try and pursue fulfillment. You know, that's a basic human right. Where I object is the idea that you can be born in the wrong body, that gender, I don't even believe that gender exists, John. I think you're born into a sex, you're either male or you're female. And what is concerning at the moment is this big push to say that actually gender is all about how you feel inside, you know, and if you're a girl who likes trains and climbing trees and is a bit of a tomboy, then really you're a boy. Or if you're a boy who likes, I don't know, cooking or cuddly toys or dolls or dresses, then really you're a girl. Actually, no, biological sex is something that is fixed. And what's really concerning is the way this is being pushed onto children. And so children are being taught that sex is just something that you can change and is all about how you feel. And this is proving very harmful.
And it's those kinds of views, Caroline, that has got you attacked an awful lot on social media. We've got to wrap in a couple of moments. But do you think your right to free expression, your right to free speech, your access to social media, because it is what would be defined as right of centre, do you feel that you are being bullied not only by the big organisations, but also by the trolls? I mean, you've been through an awful time recently. Just quickly tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, now on Twitter, I am very, very careful. I have never been shadow banned. I've never been suspended because I am very aware that, you know, if I said this man is not a woman, then I would be banned. So I have to say things like, I believe. So I'm always censoring myself.
And you obviously feel that's wrong.
Yes, I do. I do. I mean, I can't say this man is not a woman because it's hate speech, even though I'm talking a biological fact. And, you know, the other thing that's happened is, you know, I've had people publish my address, my phone number, encourage others to ring me up. They've even accused me of being a paedophile. And it's outrageous. And it's this attempt to really bully and intimidate. And they project their own hatred because actually I don't hate anybody. I might not agree with people's decisions. I might not agree with two men getting married. I might not agree with a man changing his sex.
Sure.
I might not agree with a woman who has abortion, but I would never hate on people. But they get their own kind of intolerance and hatred and they project that onto you. So it's sort of like, you must be shut down because you hate. Whereas actually, no, I don't hate at all. And in some ways, it's quite flattering because I think when people are looking to shut you down, it means that they perceive you as having an influence. So, you know, that they want to make sure that you don't get heard. But actually now for me, John, I'm in a difficult position because I'm job hunting and I need to find work. And I never knew, I was very naive 7-8 years ago when I began speaking about these issues. They weren't the hot topics they are now. And, you know, if I wanted to ever get a job in the public sector, if I ever wanted to teach, if I ever wanted to be a midwife, two things that I've really wanted to do, I know that I would probably have to change my name. And even if I wanted to work in Sainsbury's. So, you know, it is for people to be able to speak out takes a lot of courage. And I think one of the reasons that I get away with it, and sometimes not always, is because my husband is a Roman Catholic priest. So I'm, you know, still perceived as being allowed to have these views. But I think very soon it's only going to be like the professional clergy. And even they are going to be clamped down upon.
Got to stop you there. That was a very brilliant ending, the way you described that. And I think a lot of people may well agree with you about that. They may disagree with the rest. They may agree with all the rest. I don't know. But it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time today. That's Caroline Farrow. You've been listening to The John Gaunt Show, Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik. We'll be back with even more guests next week.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.